This footnote is about how peer pressure actually did help me develop some good habits. All right, so I've mentioned before, and Mika, you already know this, that I used to be a parkour instructor. And one of the things that stood out for me in the book was this whole idea of having like a community around habits, or identifying with a particular community as a way to solidify habits. And it just happened that when I started training parkour, and like, I think it was 2010 is when I really started training, I was heavily influenced by the people around me. Just, I found myself part of a community that really valued physical movement, and by extension, like nourishing our bodies in a way that would facilitate that physical movement. There was never any talk of like, oh, you've got to be skinny. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that was because like 99% of the people I was training with were dudes who were like 15 to 20 something years old. That was the majority of the people there. They didn't have the same kind of discourse around body image that I think would have been present if I had been training with, you know, women or female presenting people. And I gave myself a lot of permission to not keep up with the boys, but I had a lot of fun trying. And that was the key for me. I had fun running, jumping, challenging myself physically in a way that allowed me to stretch my limits, but not physically like damage myself. Mm. So like after training, we would usually go eat together as well. Some of these boys, they could really like, they really like filled their body with lots and lots of food after training. Some had a very different sort of style of eating. But there was never any shame around what we put into our bodies after we trained. All the discussion around eating and training was really just about how we naturally felt after training. It's like, I'm going to eat like a grilled burger and a bunch of fries and blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, we'd go into like a food court, so there was a wide variety of things. It's like, oh, I'm not really that hungry, blah, blah, blah. So it just came very naturally. And that's something that really helped me, because being part of a community where it wasn't about like going out drinking all the time and, you know, sitting around doing nothing. Not that sitting around doing nothing is inherently a bad thing, because we all deserve time to do that sometimes. But what I desired at that time was to see more of Melbourne. That's where I was living at the time. To have more friends that weren't just attached to my emotionally abusive ex-partner's social circle. And training parkour and being an instructor gave me like this whole other way of looking at this new city that I was in. And that's something that I still kind of take with me into spaces that I'm in. It's funny because Tony and I, we were at a house inspection recently, and just privately to each other, we were like, oh, you could totally do a cat to pre from right here to blah, 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 looking out the balcony and stuff. Like, we still speak in parkour, which is really cute. But I remember, you know, through parkour, I found a great personal trainer. He was one of my instructors. And the training that we did was very specific to what I wanted to be able to do with my body, to move through a space, to reach, escape. The kind of motto of parkour practitioners is be strong to be useful.
I was going to say this is very important, in that the physical activity I have found healthy and fulfilling is ones that focus on the process as the reward, the process as what you're there to do, rather than these goal-oriented, I need this many gains. I need to win that medal. I need to be the thinnest or the prettiest. Parkour, I don't have any experience with it, but it doesn't seem tend from what I can see, to super favor one particular type of body, or, you know, seems pretty varied.
Yeah.
And that the fun of being with other people and doing physical activity is what drives me.
Yeah.
I love going out with people to do something.
Yeah.
And that makes physical activity fun.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I actually had that exact experience when I was working with a new trainer. I moved countries, and so I had to get a new trainer. And my previous trainer was all focused on, like, what my body is capable of. How much can you lift? Can you get up from the feet, you know, from the ground without using your hands, those sorts of things. And I had a very limited opportunity to work with new people in the new space because there weren't a lot of trainers there. And I remember working with a trainer, and it was like our second session, and she said something along the lines of throwaway comment, like, you're going to look so hot in your jeans. And my brain instantly was like, I'm out. I'm done. I cancelled the next two sessions. I wasn't driven to it anymore.
Yeah.
But it took like a year later for me to realize what had happened. Like, it was just literally that I had been so used to that sense of what was happening was in relation, what I was doing was to grow my body's capabilities into, I'm going to change what it looks like. And I wasn't driven by changing what it looked like. And as I'm 6'2" as well. So I am tall.
Yeah.
And so I've been judged for my body. I was 6'0" when I was 12 years old. I've been judged for my body since I was very young. I've had my body type talked about. I've had so much gender dysmorphia around being a 6'2" woman and all of those things.
You should play basketball. And so,
oh, I know, right? Yes, yes. I actually was going to start a line of T-shirts that said, no, I don't play basketball. it already exists. I found it with my people in a tall person's group. But Leslie, I wanted to ask you a question about this actually, because this whole community thing around forming habits, I find community is very helpful for me in deepening my understanding of intersectionality and understanding other people's experiences and all of those sorts of things. But I think that there's also a risk in community of, if everyone is like-minded, you're creating like an echo chamber sometimes of, we don't think that way, or we aren't those kinds of people, or those sorts of things. So I would love to hear your perspective, Leslie, on like, what is the difference between community that helps with that habit versus community that keeps you in an echo chamber of not being able to see other people's experiences?
I think one of the key differences is in how the community, in kind of the people who ascend to leadership or leadership looking roles in that community, handle voices of dissent. How they manage conflict within the groups as well. If there are opposing views presented, is there an opportunity to have those discussions, or are those discussions completely shut down? And I think it is super important to be really careful about that, because sometimes when people get embedded in a community that they do start to identify very strongly with, it can feel scary to disagree or to change a habit when it becomes clear to you that, like, actually, no, this is kind of toxic. It becomes culty. And it is really challenging to, like, when you're in those depths, to recognize that. I think another key is to have an awareness of how your connections that exist outside of that community view your participation in that community.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
If there are other people who are very close to you that see kind of toxicity brewing within that, it's worth having those conversations. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's such a good one, because it just reminds me of all of those times where that's cult. Like, I'm not going to go into cult stuff because I don't have any experience with it. But often those kinds of communities that become insular start becoming insular when it's don't listen to anyone, they're not one of us, or it's creating that this is us and it's us against everyone else, or that's where we've seen a lot of those conspiracy theory kind of groups bubble around that they don't get it because they can't see. Or the other one that I was thinking of that doesn't necessarily have a leader is the eating disorder stuff in social media as well, right? That secret language and that we just do these things. And so there's not necessarily a leader curating the space. But if you were to speak to someone who's not part of that community about what goes on, they would have grave concerns for you, right? Yeah. The people who loved you would have concerns about the influence of that community on you. Mm-hmm. And so, that's really fascinating. I am very mindful of not using the word like-minded too much, right? I facilitate conferences and groups and events, and so I say like-hearted in that, like, it's like that values alignment, but it's not necessarily that we all think the same way.
Yeah.
And so, that's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Happy to share. Thank you for the question.
My quick take was that a community that does not ask you to be the same, but supports you in your personal journey. For instance, I need to leave by 9 p.m. to get to bed. Person A, no, stay for one more. Versus person B, hey, it's 9 p.m. Didn't you want to get going by 9?
Yeah, I like that.
Beautiful. Yeah. I'm definitely a bed by 9 p.m. person, so I really appreciate that.
I am a start getting ready for bed by 9 p.m. so that I can be asleep by 2 a.m.
Oh, gosh. Well, we'll definitely have a conversation about sleeping habits sometime.
Ooh, a sleep book would be a great one. There's some good ones.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get into that for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks great so combos. Much.